The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I want to tell a little story. There was once a family who went for a vacation to another country. Turned out to be a Buddhist country. And they were there for a couple of weeks, and there was a teenager who in the family, and she noticed that their vacation spot was right close to a Buddhist monastery. So the first week, she kind of just noticed, and she noticed it was a particularly calm and peaceful place that struck her as unique. The second week, she decided to kind of venture in and see what's going on in there. And fortunate for her, she met the abbess pretty soon as she came in. And they struck up a friendship, and then she went back to see the abbess every day, and abbess taught her a little bit about meditation. But the week's up quickly, and she was going to go back to her home country, which was not a Buddhist country, and she'd never heard of meditation before. So she asked the abbess, you know, when I go back to my country, how can I, how can I continue this and learn more what this meditation is all about? And this was, of course, before YouTube, the abbess said, oh, when you go back to your country, ask around for different people who are, you know, your wise people you think are wise, and ask them, if they can point you to someone they think is wise, a wise person who really knows how to listen. And then learn how to listen from that person. And that was the instructions. That was the alternative to meditation. Learn how to listen. And this idea of listening is something that's very, repeated in many religious traditions as kind of representation of the kind of attention that we bring in this kind of life of ours, of practice. And it's represented, I think, in my mind, by the idea that the direct disciples of the Buddha, in the Pali word, is sabaka, which means the people who heard, the hearers, and to be able to hear. And there's something about having the ability to hear the Dharma, literally by hearing it. Back in the old days, there was no books, there was no audio Dharma, there was, and so it was only heard, Dharma was only could only be heard in someone talking about it. But not just hearing the Dharma as it's spoken, but to hear the Dharma in everything, to hear it in the breeze that goes, in the rustling of the trees, or in the hum of the air purifier or something. What is it to hear the Dharma? So I wanted to read a little poem that a verse that is by one of the early Buddhist nuns named Uttama. And it's slightly abbreviated. I took out some of the technical terms that would maybe not mean anything for anyone or most people. Not attaining mental peace, and with no control of my mind, I approached a nun who was trustworthy. She taught me the Dharma. I listened to the Dharma. As she instructed me, I listened to the Dharma as she instructed me. For 1 week, I sat cross-legged in one spot, filled with joy and happiness. On the eighth day, I straightened out my legs and shattered the mass of darkness. She woke up. So the turning point from her distress was listening to the Dharma as it's being taught. And so listening, how do we listen? Why is listening so important? When I think about listening, I think about listening both externally, but also listening internally. And the importance of that is that, I use this metaphor, this idea, that the world that we can perceive around us is kind of infinite. It's like, you know, it spreads out wide and big, this world of ours. And if you stand on top of a mountain and look out across the world, it's, you see the vastness of it, you know, how big it is maybe. And there's so much to perceive. But if you look inward to yourself, is actually equally vast and big. And it turns out this little human body that we have is when you kind of bring the inner eye to see, or the inner ear to really listen to what's here, it can feel just as vast. It's as varied and multifaceted as the external world. And listening sits right at the junction between this external world and this internal world. You can listen both externally and internally, but the place standing there at that junction and where the listening happens, either way, it's not like a straight, pure separation to an internal and external world. The internal world that we have it influences how we listen to the external world. How the external world is with us and our experience with it influences how we experience the internal world. And to be centered in the listening, and really attend and be open to what's there, sooner or later, different times, your attention will sometimes go more to the external world, but sometimes goes more to the internal world. To the point where at some point we realize that the two are not so separate from each other, or not distinct from each other, that how we are in the internal life affects how we listen to the external world. Our listening, our perception of the world is seldom innocent, seldom just pure and simple, and we're just seeing things just as they are. But often we're listening or perceiving for certain things. We have our agendas, our concerns, our bias that we bring along in how we perceive the world, what we listen for. So to stay with the idea of listening, some people might be primed to listen to the tone of other people's voices, because a tone tells them whether they're safe or not. And so that's what they're listening for, and that's what they pick up. And what other people, never occurred to them that for some reason that does not an issue for them. And so they're listening not for the tone of the voice, but they're maybe listening about what are they saying that reflects back on me. I hope they're saying good things to me. They're speaking to me in a way that they recognize my wonderfulness and greatness. And if they don't, let me tell them about it. And other people are listening for how, because they have maybe a lifetime history of this, of how they're going to be disrespected or ignored or not seen or not understood or overlooked or diminished or someplace their value. And so they're primed to listen for that. So we perceive different things for different purposes. If you're walking down the street and you need to buy a pillow, you'll notice pillow stores or, you know. But if what you're hungry, you might be looking for a grocery store. And yes, that's what you notice. Or, you know, so that we kind of sometimes have, you know, we look according to what we want, what we're interested in, what our history is, what our associations are. Certain sounds, certain voices, certain something. We have histories of that. And so if you lived in a foreign country and had wonderful experiences with people speaking that language, and you hear people, you know, walking down the street speaking that language, it's like, oh yeah, that's so good. And our history of that language influences how we hear and the impact it has. But if it was a difficult experiences with that language, maybe you were in a war zone and it traumatic to hear that language around, that it can re-trigger some of those fears and concerns and pain and in the listening. So as we go into this more and more deeply, into this practice, we start seeing that listening, we stand at the junction of listening to the external world and the internal world. We start seeing the two aren't so absolutely separate. And that's where we begin seeing the Dharma, experiencing, finding the Dharma, not because someone's teaching the Dharma, but how we can find the Dharma in every place we go, every experience we have. Because that's where we can see, are we clinging? Are we resisting? What are we bringing with us? What are we adding to the situation? And some of what we're adding might be appropriate and wonderful. Some of it might actually be harming ourselves and other people. Some of it might not be particularly harming in the way we think about harming, but it's a kind of a wind drag. It's kind of a, it kind of like, you know, interferes with our freedom or our ease and peace. So something that's so kind of pretty subtle, maybe. And I've noticed in my, mostly I see this in my meditation these last few weeks as something I've become kind of more acutely aware of than before, is how much time comes into play in my conceptions of the moment and how it penetrates or is kind of there initially kind of unconsciously. It's kind of like oozes in to how I perceive what's going on in the moment. It can be so simple that as I exhale, I'm aware that the exhale is going to come to an end. That's time, right? It's an idea of time, a concept of time. And I can see that I can just let go of just the simple thing of the exhale coming to an end. It's just an exhale. End doesn't have to be part of it at all. It's as if it's timeless, just the exhale. And I can see the little added addition of time, concept of time that added on top of it. Some people might feel, what do you mean Gil added on top of it? Time is real. We live in time, kind of. Yes, but my conception of time is my addition. It's just like, for example, if I'm sitting meditating and someone says, well, the roof of the building is real. Does that mean that I'm supposed to be thinking about the roof all the time? Roof, roof, sitting here, roof, 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 rough, rough, you know, woof, woof. Real, you know, ideally, when you sit and meditate in IMC, none of you will think about the roof when you're sitting here. And except now that I brought it up, you'll always think about it when you come. So same thing with time. Yes, the roof exists, but you don't have to think about it all the time. You can, time exists. You don't have to think about it. And they're so subtle, the addition to it. And even something like, sometimes I'll relax when I meditate. And I see it even there too, that I'm a little bit ahead of myself to the end of the relaxation or to the, how good it's going to be when I am relaxed. Just, you know, it's only half a second ahead of myself or something, but I'm, you know, living in this extra, as opposed to just feel the relaxation, be with it. Just don't have time, as if everything that occurs is here forever, kind of, or just this is its moment and I really be here for it. So the same thing, so listening, there's all these things that come along with listening. All these associations, memories, meaning, agendas, preferences that come along. So as we learn to sit back and listen deeply, then we're also learning to listening to ourselves. There's a story of a man who came to a therapist and said, you know, my spouse is always angry and it's so difficult to live with my spouse. And I've tried to deal with this for years, but I think I need some help here from a therapist. And the therapist said, well, have you ever tried listening to your spouse? Well, no. Well, go home and listen. So the person did and came back the next week to the therapist and said, I've been listening, but it doesn't change anything. Okay, I'm glad you've been listening. Now go back and listen to what's behind the words your spouse speaks. Where are the words coming from? So the person went back and spent another week listening and listening what was behind the words and came back to the therapist and said, oh, this made all the difference in the world. There's peace at home now. Because I realized that when my spouse was angry, for me, I had to, you know, I felt attacked and my, you know, I kind of assumed we had to attack back and we had to have a fight. I had to protect myself. But when I listened to what was behind the words, I realized my spouse is afraid. And when I realized the fear was there and I asked if we could talk about it, that just changed everything. And there was no more any fights in the home. And we had a whole different conversation. So to listen deeply to ourselves that way, what's behind our words? So many of us live in conversations, live in memories, live in projected futures and concepts and ideas. What happens if we listen to ourselves deeply? And in doing so, maybe hear what's behind the words. Some people are phenomenally, you know, in the world of thinking and stories and imagery. It's a fine story sometimes, a fine world sometimes to be in. But what happens if you listen to what makes you think? And listen to that. What do you find? And what happens to, you know, if you listen deeply there to what makes you think, what makes you, your impulse to be. And once you're there and discover that, I bet also then you'll learn to listen to others in new ways. Because what was making you spend a lot of time thinking probably is influencing how you were listening as well. Certain subtle agendas or concerns. But so this idea of settling back and listening deeply, deeply. And, you know, I grew up speaking Norwegian. And there's a word, just like in English, there's a word for hearing and a word for listening. And listening, the word is lytte. But if there's a academic Norwegian dictionary, Akademisk Norsk Ordbok, the dictionary that has a definition for lytte, for this listen, that I really love. Make an effort. And I've never known, maybe other dictionaries do this too, but part of the definition is in parentheses. So I don't know why, you know, but okay. So it says, make an effort, and then it says in parentheses, and keep quiet. Maybe it's parentheses because you're supposed to say it quietly. Something. So make an effort and keep quiet to pick up, perceive sound. What a great definition. To listen, but to be quiet as you listen. And the reference point I have for that is listening to a very quiet sound far in the distance. And I think some of us, if we try to do that, we even close our eyes and get really quiet and kind of quiet our thinking mind so we can really hear the subtle sound. But what happens, is it possible to quiet the inner chatter? Even if it's just for 2 moments. And I'd suggest that's a way of beginning to hear the Dharma in everything. It's in that quiet we can pick up and experience better where the stress is, where the compulsions are, where the preoccupations are. And one of the marvelous things about being quiet for 1 moment or 2 moments, it doesn't have to be long, is that it could be just long enough to see how difficult it is to be quiet. And as soon as you start seeing how difficult it is to be quiet, that's where the Dharma can be found. That's where we see where there's compulsion and clinging and desire and fears operating. And rather than being upset at seeing that, in the Dharma, we kind of celebrate. Oh, I saw it. I see it more clearly than ever before. And some people have specialized at, you know, being critical about what they see. Like, all good news, all self-knowledge is bad news. But in the Dharma, we're training ourselves to kind of learn to appreciate seeing the compulsions, the agendas, the fears, the angers, the greed, the desires that we get caught in. We appreciate it not so we can do it better, but so that we could listen to it and listen to where does it come from? What's even deeper than that? And to listen in such a way that the listening has a lot of space and room. One of the things I love about listening, and there's not a good argument that it's different than this. You can make probably some argument. But there's something about listening that you're not touching what you're listening to. You're not interfering in a certain way. I think of listening as making space to allow oneself to hear. And so there's a kind of a peacefulness or non-aggressiveness, hopefully, in the listening. There might be times when listening is aggressive and maybe even problematic, but what I'm pointing to is what inspires me about listening is it's kind of like this ability to have perception that doesn't require any kind of interfering with what's happening. It just allows things to be as they are, but they're heard. But to really know how to do that well, then we have to also hear ourselves, listen to ourselves, to see where the extra baggage we bring, the extra judgments and values and preoccupations we have, because listening is seldom innocent. But to have this sense, this clear reference point of the possibility of listening without interfering. And the reference point for that, for me, is hearing. And the difference between listening and hearing is that listening requires some effort, as the Norwegian dictionary says, you know, make an effort. It's some directedness to listen. But hearing and listening sometimes is synonymous in the way we speak, but sometimes hearing doesn't have that directedness, doesn't have the effort. We can hear without having to think about or want to hear what we want. You know, a loud car goes by, we hear it, but initially we're not planning to hear it, choosing to hear it, directing ourselves to hear it. We just hear it. The bird sings and we hear it. And there's something about just hearing and leaving things alone and being able to relax and open and just hear that is a wonderful reference point for seeing when we can't hear. When we do get involved and caught up in our thoughts and ideas of what's going on. And that's one of the functions of mindfulness, meditation, this path of Buddhism, is not to kind of fall into some wonderful bliss state, wonderful place of peace, and just kind of like have a kind of enlightened retirement. And I have it made, and that's, you know, if only I could be, you know, kind of rest in peace, then everything will be okay. The purpose of the Dharma is to have just enough peace so that we can see what takes us away from it. And that's where we see the Dharma. That's where we hear the Dharma. And so when we listen to the trees rustling or the birds or the rivers going or the rain falling, we're not just hearing the rain, the leaves rustling, we're also, if you listen well, we're hearing that there's a mutuality, a cooperation in the hearing. It's us and our memories and our associations and all kinds of things that come along with the hearing. And this, and some, if we don't have any attachments and clinging and fears and all this extra kind of suffering producing things as part of it, it gets to be a very rich world to hear and listen and perceive the natural world around us and the social world around us. It adds a kind of deeper dimensions to it. What are we listening to? It's kind of co-created. It's kind of like it's not just completely out there, it's not completely in here, but something is happening in the interface and the connectivity and the ways in which we somehow overlap our lives or co-create our lives together or co-create with the wind blowing in the trees out there. And what is that? What is that world? What is that life? A life that's not maybe so self-centered, but it's not exactly self-forgetting either. So to listen deeply, to hear, to allow so to be able to hear the Dharma not only and when it's Dharma's being taught by someone, but to be able to hear the Dharma all the time, wherever we go, the Dharma's available if we've learned how to listen. And then we become a disciple of the Buddha, a savaka, a listener. So let's all listen, and remember also to listen to each other, and maybe to listen to what's below the words of what people say, so that we can love in some deeper way what's behind the words. And may listening be a vehicle for care and compassion and love in this world that we live in. So thank you very much. And for those of you who are on YouTube, we've started now a few weeks ago to have a Zoom room that's open after the talk where Jan and Barry kind of host it and they do some breakout groups and just to have a discussion about the talk or about the Dharma or get to know each other a little bit. So, and I think that the link is, I think it's in the chat. At the very top of the chat, and also I think it's going to be posted in a few minutes or moments, or is it again now? Thank you, Martha. And then it's also on the IMC calendar. If on the homepage of IMC there's a calendar, you can find a link there to the Zoom room. So thank you. And we do have a little bit of time left before the official ending of today. Does any of you have any comments or questions that you'd like to make at this point? So Brian.
Well, thank you. That was a wonderful talk. And, you know, a lot of my work has been with listening to the world, so it was very appropriate. The problem is that when I listen to my body won't stop complaining. It says, oh, you're finally listening to me. Your shoulder hurts. And also I have really bad tinnitus. So whenever I listen, I hear the tinnitus. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are difficult for me when I actually listen to my body.
Yes. So, what you're calling the difficulty.
Yeah.
That's where you find the Dharma.
Okay.
So I would shy away from experiencing that difficulty. Mm-hmm. But for you to discover, what do you mean by difficulty? What exactly is happening? Because a painful shoulder, mm-hmm. one way of thinking about it, it's helpful to think kind of provisionally that a painful shoulder is just a painful shoulder. There's no difficulty. The difficulty is what you're adding. So what is that? And so I'd encourage you that you seem to sit well and still. I would encourage you to, in meditation at least, spend time being very patient with the physical pain and listen to it and feel it and discover what you're adding that's extra. And the advantage of that is that once you can find what's extra, the resistance, the judgments, the fears, or whatever, the expectation, or whatever the extra that's very respectful for our body, then you might be able to listen to your body more deeply. And then you might be able to discern that there's subtle or not so subtle shifts you can make in your posture, or how to take care of this part of yourself better. Also, you might discover that the body has self-healing powers. And sometimes some of the places of tension will begin to unravel themselves or soften or open up. Or you start discovering that, well, I guess this pain will be forever, but the problem was not the pain. The problem was all the tension I added around it. And I can soften the tension that's around it, and then it becomes simpler and simpler. And it turns out I can be peaceful. I can be at peace with the pain once I've kind of, you know, settled some of the extra layers. So I don't know if how I worded it is meaningful for you, but
That's wonderful.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Take your time and a lot of compassion and care. The only thing I would suggest for you is some basically suggesting, you know, sit in pain. What I suggest for you is only do it, sit with the pain, when you feel you want to. Okay, this is a good exercise. This is useful. I understand why I'm doing it. I see how I understand. Really understand this. There's a way in which this is beneficial for me, and it's not easy to do, but I feel motivated. When you no longer feel motivated, or understand how it's beneficial, probably take a break. You don't have to force yourself to kind of, you know, bear through it at all costs. So just be caring for yourself too that way.
Thank you, dear Sangha. So in my 10 years of practice, I've gone from someone who's unable to listen to being very, very...
Can you hold the quote at my ears?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Okay. So in my 10 years of practice, I've gone from not being able to listen to people to listening so deeply that I've become very reactive.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering if there's a difference, or if there's a passive listening, active listening, what I do, I'd call it reactive listening.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Great. Well, I congratulate you for listening deeply. That's a really great thing to learn how to do. And Chan, I don't know you well enough, but what I suspect is happening is that you've come to a deeper place inside of you that what you hear is striking it. So what I mean by this is that if I hold my hand like this and someone comes along like this, you know, there's resistance. It hits something. But if my hand relaxes, then this goes right through. It doesn't stop. And so, or if I had like this, lots of space and things just find their way through. So you're probably touching something very deep inside of you that those things are striking. And so discover what they're hitting. And if you can find out what's going on, because it doesn't have to hit anything. So what is that it's hitting? And then I think you're probably what's wonderful, sensitivity and capacity to perceive and feel, and others might even get more acute, but it's just going to not land anywhere. It's not going to hit anything, and you'll feel more porous, and you won't be unfeeling if you do that, but you'll actually be more capable of holding what's going on.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense, yes, because I have PTSD, so.
Yeah. One of the things we're trying to do in this practice, I would say, suggest, and I think listening is, again, a nice metaphor for this, is we're expanding our capacity to hold life experience. So rather than necessarily solving the problems or fixing things that happen, we're making more room in the mind, the heart, the body, to be able to hold things and to be present for things as they are. And so sometimes we were so preoccupied with ourselves, with our concerns, our life, that there's very little room. And then if there's very little room in there, then sometimes I feel like I have to change the world so that everything can be okay. And the other people have to behave better so that I can be okay. But as we learn to open up the ears to listen, then it turns out there's lots of room in hearing to hear all kinds of things without being reactive to it. There's lots of room in the heart, amazingly, lots of room in our love that can just be really spacious. And it doesn't forgive people for what they say sometimes. It isn't like, you know, everything is good. We don't have to then, we don't have to react to it because we have so much space. So thinking of meditation as increasing our capacity is, I think, a useful orientation. So any last one? Anything else anyone wants to? Well, thank you all for coming, and I hope that you'll come back soon. And we'll probably make soon, maybe in a few days, an update for the registration and things for, and how we do it here at IMC and what we're opening for. I think a lot of you have registered, so you'll get an email with the updates for November. Probably we'll open a little bit more at IMC, and we might change a little bit how we do this Sunday morning, so that information will be, will come through those emails, people who are registered. And the reason we do it that way is we don't want to make it too public when we're open, because that's a little bit of a challenge for the managers. If people who show up without having been, that we know that they're, you've been vaccinated. And also we want to try to keep the numbers in a proper number. And we might slowly increase the number, but we want to keep tabs on that. So we don't want to just have people wandering in. So it's through being registered and getting that email that you find out what's actually happening. So thank you all very much.